Hi, I'm John Milius. I'm the writer and director of this film.
Hi, I'm Bill McDonald. I'm one of the executive producers of this film.
Bill, you go ahead first.
Well, we had considered doing something about Theodore Roosevelt for quite a while. Tom Berenge and I had a partnership in a company called First Corps Endeavors, and we had set out to do a number of historic films. He'd been so successful in Gettysburg that we decided to do a film about Theodore because he was someone that we thought was very misunderstood and certainly for modern audiences, either unknown or misunderstood. And so we set out to do a pure biography picture, and at the time when we initiated the project, he was very close to another writer, a director, Hugh Wilson, and they had collaborated on other films in the past, and we approached him and had a chat about developing a 3-hour or 4-hour sort of a definitive tome about who Teddy Roosevelt was and how this incredible adventure that he put together with the Rough Riders sort of came about. And from that sort of the initial development of the first screenplay, Mr. Wilson went off and did The First Wives Club, and for a number of reasons could no longer participate in the Rough Riders. And John and I had been friends, and we'd never really collaborated before, but I knew he was an expert in all things historic, and particularly an expert in particularly the character of Theodore Roosevelt. And so I approached John, and he was willing, and obviously rendered an amazing, amazing movie.
Well, this story was probably the first adventure story that I was ever told. My father was quite taken. He went to World War I. My father was 58 when he sired me, so he was of a different generation. And when he grew up, this was the great story. Teddy Roosevelt was the great American hero. I mean, Teddy Roosevelt or Jim Bridger or Kit Carson or something like that, but the whole idea of, the president, the cowboy president, the president who was an Eastern established Brahmin who goes off, is Secretary of the Navy and goes off to fight, his own war and everything, starts his own war and goes off and fights. I mean, it's just an extraordinary story. It's still one of the most amazing stories in our history.
I think, John, you had touched on it before on Wind in the Line. It wasn't done that.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I'm the only person ever. He doesn't appear in any movies. I mean, there's some shots of newsreel footage in Citizen Kane, or there's a character in Arsenic and Old Lace running down the stairs. But he doesn't appear in any movies. It's very strange that he's been kind of that the whole story's kind of been pushed aside. I think that TR is hard for people to take because the idea is that he sets a pretty high standard.
I was always intrigued and fascinated by the guy's early life, which obviously was a precursor, and he manifested so many of his skills. I mean, this was a incredibly brilliant guy. They always say that, when Kennedy was in the White House, the only time there was a smarter person in the Oval Office was when Thomas Jefferson sat there by himself. But I always said, and Tom and I always talked about it, that we would strongly argue against that. If you look at the history of what Theodore Roosevelt had accomplished by the time he was 25... really started the first physical fitness program.
An asthmatic.
He was an asthmatic. He was one of the world's leading ornithologists. He was a linguist. Truly, I think, our most remarkable president, and I think very much overlooked, certainly by modern generations, who only really remember him as, walk carefully and carry a big stick.
he came from the power structure. He came from, he was that whole kind of, as I say, the Brahmins, Ivy League moneyed power structure. But he was truly a man of the people.
The world stage. So let the spotlight fall on us.
This is a great speech.
Yeah, this is.
I love to hear this speech.
Tom did this every night throughout the whole production, practiced this speech. Because it's, how many pages was this? This was like.
Not many pages, but.
But I mean, it's a lot of talk.
Yeah. Got to hear this speech.
And Teddy was the first guy on film, right? Was the first president on film, I think.
Yeah.
We are not willing to defend it. All the great masterful races have been fighting races. And to lose the fighting virtues is to lose the right to stand at all. There are higher things in life than the soft enjoyment of material comforts.
And my God, that's right. The same globe as is in the Wind and Light, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah. He took my globe and put it in there.
So let the world well, you got, John, though, you got that original footage. As I say, he was the first president photographed on film, on moving camera, moving pictures. And he studied this stuff, that particular look where he juts the jaw out and the... And the teeth?
Yeah, and people are actually, there's many, many instances in Theodore Rex, which is a wonderful book about his presidency, and many people in seeing him talk said they were afraid that he was actually going to bite them.
That's
an urgent dispatch, sir.
This time of night?
Are you Mr. Hurst?
Of course I'm Hurst.
An urgent message from Washington.
And thus began the Spanish-American War.
No, no!
I, of course, didn't care or give it much concern at the time, as I was otherwise employed.
Tom was also really interested in, as you've heard, in TR. And he was, TR was a major, kind of hero to him, too. I haven't seen this sequence in a long time. I love. See, I always wanted to do a Western, and so I finally got to do a little bit of a Western,
That's right.
And it looks great. Actually, this story is sort of a Western,
What the hell's wrong with you? Damn near shot me back.
Just trying to scare you.
You did a damn good job.
Pull the box down and the key.
In the first 40 seconds of talking to John about Teddy Roosevelt, it was very clear that Tom Berenger was going to play Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah.
It just didn't make it.
And Tom looks like him.
Yeah, he really does. I mean, there's only really one prosthetic in this thing. He's got a little extra cap on his teeth just to make them a little bit more pronounced. But it's amazing when we've... finished the thing. We had a rap party at the Menger's Hotel, which is in next to the Alamo, where Roosevelt had signed up a lot of the Rough Riders from Texas. And he stood in his uniform underneath this huge portrait of Teddy Roosevelt, and the whole place just exploded because it was so close. The resemblance was so close.
Yes, we remember this girl was Gary Busey's wife.
Scurvy knave.
What is that? Is that a journal? Boy, give me that journal. Make it quick. Get in there. Let's go, everybody. Hurry up.
Get in. You kill that posse in Bisbee. Leave the married men at home and be well mounted.
You can bet on that, mister. I got a good look at you. You'll hang for this.
Yeah, we'll probably sooner than later.
Ha! Get out of here! Fire out!
George.
That other fellow that you just saw there is a fantastic character, an old friend of John's, Joaquin Jackson.
Yeah, Joaquin Jackson.
Who's a Texas Ranger.
One of the most famous Texas Rangers. Very good, close friend. I go out here to this ranch right here every year to hunt with friends of mine to go ever since then. This is like 8 years now that we've been going there for hunting, and I came before that, you know. It's a very beautiful ranch. Alpine, Texas. Classic West Texas. It's what you think Texas should look like, you know?
Theodore, as a mother, I am opposed to war. But if you're going, I see no reason why you can't take Hamilton and his chums. His grandfather was Secretary of State. That should mean something. Yes, I understand you'll do your best, Theodore. I expect that. Thank you. And give my regards to Edith. Goodbye.
Bravo, Mrs. Vitch. Sometimes it helps to know a big shot. Mother, you are extraordinary. It's the duty, the honor of the patrician class to lead by the sword. What type of unit is Theodore putting together? He's asking for Western.
See, that was one of the unique things about this ragtag group of people that Teddy put together was he made sort of an open call across America, and people of every walks of life and every social strata came and called, heard the call to answer and volunteered. These are his New York friends, the polo set and the... I think that's Ham Fish there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they, in fact, were... you know, these were tough characters. I mean, in those days, you know, they weren't little rich boys. I mean, they had to do stuff. They, you know, they had a lot of money and everything, but they were, you know, they played polo, they played hard, you know, they climbed mountains, they were outdoorsmen, and he knew that they would be very good at this. And most of them, you know, were kind of yearning to go into the military for some reason or another.
That's Tiffany, right?
Yeah, that's Bill Tiffany. If it is a sin to
covet honor, I haven't seen this in so long, and all of these fellows have become great friends.
Yeah.
Particularly Chris, is
yeah.
a dear friend of mine, and I sort of, I haven't seen this in so long, I kind of forgot him. And then you should note carefully that this is many, many years before anyone made the Band of Brothers.
Yes, yeah. Well, of course, those are Shakespeare's words.
Yes.
So. And the St. Crispin's Day speech was common to people. People set it off.
These guys still do this when they get together.
Really?
Yeah.
That's great.
You throw a couple of drinks at them and they...
You start doing the St. Christmas Day speech.
Exactly.
And I love this, that he looks around. He's very quick to abandon his family.
Yeah. War's a lot of hell, a lot better than what I'm doing
yeah,
over here.
He's not doing too well.
This guy, too.
This guy's not doing well either. Yeah. Look what you did. Well, you just look at, there's so many great actors out there, like this woman who did this. She was from Texas, and she was terrific. She just really got into it. She was a very, very sweet, delightful woman, and she just loved, you know, tearing into him like that. So there's a lot of great, great actors. There's thousands of great actors out there all the time that are never going to get a chance, and you just have to go find them.
I need it like water. Honor means nothing. My future means nothing if I have to live without you. I'm not afraid to die. I'm just afraid to have to live without you.
I love this, that he swears he's loved her and that he's not going to go, and he tells his father. And
to hell with him.
Bueno, mijo. And there he is.
There he is.
Pues que Dios me lo bendiga. Miren, con ese rifle, yo peleé contra los Apaches.
I know this is a great friend of Tom's for many years.
Yeah, a wonderful actor.
Fabulous. This is Anthony Quinn's son,
yeah.
Francesco. I think he was in Platoon with Tom.
Yes, he was.
As was Mark Moses, the fellow from the other scene, the tall, thin, handsome fellow. And then you were really close with Busey, obviously,
from
Wednesday and other things, and Sam Elliott, who is great in those things.
Back
How come their horses ain't played out? Come on, let's cut over.
Roosevelt was deluged with applications for all kinds of reasons. And just what this is, I mean, these guys are outlaws, and they're going to end up in the unit to hide out. And that really happened. There were plenty of people who were pretty shady characters who showed up and, you know, managed to get in.
Hey, man, come pet me.
You're a fool. How can you expect me to respect a fool?
Young Bill Goodrich is going.
Now then, he's a fool, too. I'll tell you the truth. You don't hear it often. Honor is a word someone thought up to get other people to stay in line. This manliness espoused by some deluded, upstart New York cowboy isn't real. Being alive is real. Being wealthy and warm and well thought of is real. It's what any man really wants if he's honest. And you have that. Where are you going?
Water.
Take something stronger. I prefer the excuse that you're drunk.
Oh, I love this speech. Gotta hear this.
Life is hunger and anger and dirt. It's not polo or football or boxing. Your grandfather knew all about life, and he didn't recommend it. That's why we're rich. What if you turn out a coward? How will you feel then?
I'm afraid of that. Perhaps more than I am of dying. Can't you understand? I'm more afraid of dying some rich boy in his bed and never knowing hunger, never knowing dirt, never knowing pain, never knowing honor, never knowing courage. Deserve to know.
You go and you may get what you deserve.
Man, I love that.
Edith, Let's get to the point. Let's not pretend.
She sends him off to war, you know, because she wants him to get it over with, you know. And that's what my wife said to me when I went to the Gulf War. She said, get it over with.
Our finances are sound. You have no reason to think me irresponsible. And nothing you can say will make me change my mind.
I want you to go. It's your war. Done your best to start it.
When my father would tell me stories when I was a little kid, you know, to put me to bed or something, this story was probably the first I remember.
And what if I am killed?
No, you haven't.
This guy was so intense to Teddy, though. I mean, you know. I don't know how many books he wrote, but he wrote over 100.
Yeah, extraordinary amount, and really good stuff. The Winning of the West was...
His first real military book was The War of 1812.
And he wrote that when he was in his 20s.
And it's in every ship of the United States Navy. I was on an aircraft carrier 2 years ago. The Abraham Lincoln went into the Admiral's private chambers, and there's definitely a copy of Teddy Roosevelt's. And I think he wrote it maybe...
The Naval War of 1812.
That's what it's called, yeah.
And then, he wrote The Winning of the West when he was still in his 20s, too.
Yeah, and he'd gone out to the West when his...
That's when he wrote it. He wrote the last of that when he was in a cabin on the Missouri River. It never occurred to him that he would get killed in this war. I mean, even when he went up the hill or anything, it just never entered into his thinking. To him, it was like going off on a crusade or something. You know, it was a knightly thing. I mean, it was expected of young men to do things like that. You know, at some point in their life, they're going to have this opportunity, and they did that.
man. We've been up in the high country. When's that train pulling out?
Wasn't it during that train sequence that the someone loaded up the film that had already been exposed?
No, it was in the later train sequence.
Okay.
Yeah.
No one had ever actually experienced anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah, he always referred. I mean, people. A rough rider was some, you know, was a you know, kind of a word for a cowboy. You know, was, you know, the horseman of the plains and stuff. And I love this, that he's sure this is the posse coming in to get him.
All right. This is actually based on a true event, right? There were a couple of guys that.
Yeah. Joined up. Matter of fact, they were part of the Butch Cassidy gang.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Know who that is?
Nope.
Up there is Bucky O'Neill, sheriff of Yavapai County. Hell, he's killed over 35 men. Sure he ain't never heard of him?
These eyes.
Well, I never met him personally. Me neither.
I forget her name. She's the daughter of the guy who owns the. She's quite a character. She was a great writer. She was like a stunt woman.
Mm.
She's done a lot of acting and stuff. But I mean, there are these people there that you could get, who were, you know, just terrific, and of course who loved being in a Western. You know. See, these actors like Sam or Brad, or most of these people, they're all. They love Westerns, and they're all expert horsemen, you know, and stuff, and you can really see it.
Well, Brad was a rodeo champion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Sam was a great horseman. This was probably, as a director, my best work logistically, and I got all of this in, and I got everything I wanted in 50 days. I would get as many as 40 setups a day. And get what I wanted, like that right there. You know, that's the first thing, that whole scene between him and her, would be the first thing the studio would cut out. So you don't need that to tell the story. But you do, that's what it's about.
That's even more remarkable. 50 days may seem like a long time in one location, but there were four company moves.
Yeah,
you got to make this look like West Texas with the stagecoaches, and you got to make it look like Cuba. You've got Washington, D.C., and that was one of the wildest stories. It was raining so hard during part of this that one of the trucks rolled over full of the lighting equipment on a shoulder that was too soft and broke all the lights. All that had to be replaced.
Or had to be done without.
Yeah, all right, done. And that's what he improvised was he shot most of that stuff without it, and until we could get this all this stuff replaced.
Yeah, and there was constantly things like that going on where we didn't have cover or something, like we had to build a set under a tarp or something and shoot. But what was interesting is when you get in the spirit of that, where you absolutely don't have enough money and you don't have enough time, and you have to figure out ways to do it.
Command of the regiment. Good evening, young Marine.
This is the character, Leonard Wood, who Tom thought he was going to play. And after John and I got a hold of him, we said, wait a minute, there's going to be a poster that says Theodore Roosevelt with a relatively unknown actor playing Teddy, and you and Sam Elliott in the background. Aren't they going to ask a couple of questions like, what the hell are these people doing?
Yeah.
Keep my mouth shut and listen.
And you'd take orders from me.
Sir? Gladly, sir. What are you saying, Leonard?
I love his Dale Dye, who's just a wonderful character who trains all the troops and everything else, and is a great actor. Doesn't have any formal training as an actor. He's just a natural ham.
Mm.
And he knows, he just knows how to do it. He's very, very good. And watch, it's a very sophisticated performance.
Leonard, please help me.
See, this is where he shows this unbridled energy of Teddy. I mean, when
it's actually based on a true incident.
Henriette Adler, recently arrived from Paris.
Enchanté, mademoiselle. Permettez-moi à vous présenter à mon capitaine Leonard Wood. Enchanté. C'est sa femme Laura, ma femme Edith.
Charmed.
Senator, we must not waste time. Businesses and commercial markets must not stand in the way of justice or opposition to tyranny. Are we to become a rich, refined culture?
Roosevelt,
become
flower.
Pardon, mademoiselle. Mille pardon. Permettez-moi. Right now, we are on the...
Well, for anything, what I always do is I take the major characters, and usually sometimes in groups, because it's better. Instead of rehearsing, I like them to study their characters, and the historical characters, and the character that is... as it is written in the script and things like this. And I want them to get all the questions, and then come. Then I have them come to see me. And I usually, it's better to have them come three or four at a time rather than one at a time, because they'll bounce stuff off each other then. And so you have a good lively session with them where they're going to invent a lot of stuff. And that really works better than rehearsing, because you don't want them to get too used to anything.
For the battle sequences specifically, the Dale here, this fellow on the right playing Woods, had been the tech advisor on Platoon, and what they'd done on that was actually have these guys bivouac and learn how to be kind of a squadron in Vietnam, and did the same thing on this thing. It's kind of
we decided we were going to train an entire troop, which is 80 men,
right?
So we got the actors and about 60-some reenactors, and they were going to go through a hard, harsh week of training.
Very good.
Leonard, I do believe I convinced the senator.
Very good.
I think he will join the fight.
Mr. President, the Honorable Joseph Wheeler.
Come in, Congressman. Sit down. Make yourself comfortable.
I will. Good morning, Mr. President.
Morning, General.
This is Brian Keith's last thing, and because he played Teddy Roosevelt in my other movie, The Wind in the Line, and he loved the part more than any ever did, and he wanted to be in this, and he knew he was dying when he did this, and he just wanted the last to do this. And of course, that's Lee Ermey.
We'll react to war with Spain.
We have to move troops through the South to get to Florida and Cuba.
And that is quite obviously Busey. I like, he's quite restrained here.
Now, how would the folks in Richmond and Atlanta feel?
See, they had a problem here. They were very nervous about having essentially Union troops go move on a train to the South. So
especially Negro Union troops.
This guy, Wheeler, was one of the surviving generals of the Civil War, and so they put him on the front of the train so that as they passed through the stations, he'd wave as a great hero.
Well, he was also, a congressman. So
that's right,
He was a very important congressman.
General, what we're getting at is, if you would be interested in taking command of all the volunteer cavalry units...
Well, I'm a lot older now than I was in the Civil War.
Oh, but you are spry, General. Very spry. We could use someone from the South to participate at a very high level of command.
What you need is a Southerner. Have you got a cigar?
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. President. You gentlemen wouldn't be trying to snicker an old Democrat out of his chair on the House Ways and Means Committee, would you?
Well, Joe, we need Democrats in this war, too.
That's very smart, Mr. President. It'll have to be a real command, no bull manure. I'd have the rank as Major General. Answer only to the Corps Commander. Whole Cavalry Command. Regulars as well as volunteers. Negroes, whites, whatever.
My son just graduated from West Point. I'll need him on my staff.
boys want a cigar? But don't worry too much about them people in the South. There's nothing they like better than a good fight. Good day, gentlemen.
We don't even celebrate the 4th of July. Maybe after this, we will.
This was shot in...
Was it
not in Houston, in San Antonio. The all of this stuff was in San Antonio. And then the training was in Palestine, Texas. And then one of the battles is in Banderas. The San Juan Hill thing is in Banderas. We'll get into that a little later, you know, about how we picked that place and everything. And then the then we shot in West Texas. So we had four company moves.
Hell with Spain. He was your appointment, was he not?
Oh, I had a hand in it. And it was your plan that had him coal his warships and be ready to sail for Manila Bay? Secretary Long was on vacation in New England. And you...
Yeah, this is a part of Roosevelt's great realpolitik. While his superior, the Secretary of the Navy, was on vacation because it was so hot in Washington, he sent the Maine and some other parts of the fleet to re-coal up in Havana Harbor.
Or no, in the Pacific, and then he sent them, as soon as war started, he sent them into the Philippines to seize the Philippines.
That's right. Yeah. But he didn't send the Maine there?
No, the Maine was blown up by then.
But I thought, oh, yeah. Okay.
No, he sent Dewey and his fleet into Manila Harbor.
Crag, smokeless, repeating carbines. Don't come to San Antonio without them. Do I make myself clear?
Precisely, sir.
Oh, and one more thing. The regiment has been expanded. You may bring your Fifth Avenue contingent.
Oh!
Hamilton Fish's mother should be delighted.
Bully!
Colonel! I didn't catch that salute.
Stop!
This is the scene where we lost a whole day's worth of film, you know, and we had to reshoot it over. We actually had more people, many more people and everything. We had to, somebody opened the film cans and stuff, and everything was messed up. We were there for a couple of days because we had a night there, too.
Where are you from, partner?
Arizona! New Mexico!
This is true that everywhere they went, young girls would bring them pies and food and stuff like this because, you know, this was really a populist movement. You know, this war, there hadn't been a war since the Civil War, and this was the first war really against real sort of against a foreign power that was almost showing that we now were capable of dealing with the world on our terms. You know, it was the beginning of American empire.
And a reunification after the divisiveness of the Civil War. You know,
it was us
brought them all together.
You know, coming upon the world stage.
I am Rafael del Castillo. It's for me an honor.
Good to meet you too.
Look, sir, I'm O'Neill. The governor of Arizona put me in temporary command of our volunteers.
Yes, O'Neill. Bucky O'Neill. Have you met my staff? Maximilio Luna, my captain from New Mexico. Mr. Brody here is from Tucson.
Brody?
Brought a good bunch of boys in.
Thank you.
This is Captain Alan Capron, one of the finest officers in the regular cavalry.
Pleasure, sir.
He can teach you
it
anything.
It pulled everybody together. And he pulled. This unit, of course, the press, you know, followed the exploits of this unit and the training, and they didn't ever expect him to get to Cuba. I mean, what he did was so extraordinary. I mean, he's the Assistant Secretary of the Navy, and he creates a war. He was the one who wanted to go after Spain to liberate Cuba and all this, and he sort of created the situation. Then when the Maine was blown up, there was sort of an inevitability that there was going to be a war. But But, I mean, the whole idea that he goes to war, he then gives up his position as Secretary of the Navy and goes to war. It would be like Arnold giving up the governorship because he's, you know, determined to go after the North Koreans, and then joining the military, raising his own unit, and then leading an attack or something, and then winning the war. I mean, that's the only way. There's only character in politics today that you can even imagine to have the notoriety or the color of Teddy Roosevelt is Arnold.
And the ultimate effect, of course, was the end of the Spanish Empire, which changed the balance of power throughout the world, really, and forever. And made him president, ultimately.
All right. Sure thing. Danny, thanks.
He didn't break an egg in you, did he?
Yeah, it don't hurt much.
You said you ride anything with hair on it.
I didn't say how long.
Well, he's yours now, and yours. You get a broker, you can eat him.
Excuse me, gentlemen. Do you know what we
Here
might
come the polo guys.
My name is Hamilton Fish. These men and I have come to join the regiment.
Hamilton Fish. I'm Henry Nash, this is Indian Bob.
A pleasure.
How Hello. You doing?
Hey, y'all. Roosevelt ain't here yet.
I love that guy. Yes. He was picked for, because you could say that so well.
See, and this is a great example of the Rough Riders, the mixed cultures and the mixed social strata. They've got the polo Indians. Guys and the Indians and the Francesco playing the Mexican, sort of young Don.
It was a pretty good piece.
A good distance.
Damn good distance. What you need is a horse. Yes, sir, what you need is a horse.
Have you got one?
Right there.
See, now he's going to test him here.
See, the idea is that these dandies won't know how to ride a horse.
Yeah, that he's giving them the worst horse, this killer horse.
The one that just threw the Indian off.
Yeah.
Thank you, Robert. Wadsworth, isn't it?
Yes, Craig.
This is Starbucks attire. Nice fellows, hmm?
Especially the best.
He's a sweet animal. You're gonna like him. Got a good gait. You may want to pull your hat down.
I'll be right back. He's a spirited mount.
That is one of the most mischievous people you'll ever meet, on or off screen.
He learned to ride like that.
Wadsworth is the best polo player in the country. Do you play polo?
Oh, yeah, every day, right after my bubble bath.
That was a theme that we tried to constantly show, is that here are the, you know, the dandies, the swells are cooking, and, you know, and then right away they're into it, you know. Which is what really happened. There wasn't a lot of tension between them at all, because we liked the fact that, you know, the guy from Harvard sitting next to a bank robber, you know.
Breaking us up into troops tomorrow.
Yeah, well, I won't be around here, Sid.
It was, you know, a country that was so disparate. And, you know, each, you know, part of the country was so different and so strange, you know, and it had never really, you know, pulled together like this.
Well, you're welcome to come, and you're a fool if you don't.
Which is, an American military tradition. You know, every World War II movie has the people from different parts of the country. The guy from Brooklyn, the guy from the Midwest, the Italian kid, you know.
Bands were playing and people waving. Hell, no one ever thought well of me my whole life.
And you think these people are any different? Wake up.
I think they are different. Besides that, the food's good, and there's plenty of it.
Well, suit yourself. Mother Nash never raised no foolish children.
Huh. We say folks help spread, huh?
The country wasn't tied together by anything but really the railroads. The telegraph was relatively new. They had all this new technology arriving. It was one of the things that was great about the training program, is they had, you'll see, they have a whole bunch of very interesting new weaponry. And going through that, as much as they kicked and screamed because we had a flash flood and all sorts of things went wrong. The beauty of the training was that they had actually used some antiquated weaponry that, you know, as John said to the gang when they were doing this, you can't have a guy misfire and stare at the thing or come out of character because he doesn't really know the weaponry. And that really did help a lot, particularly when you're on something like this.
They had to really know what they were doing. They had to know how to operate their weapons, how to take care of themselves. They were forced, the whole time they were training, they had to eat the same kind of food. They had to, you know, cook with the same stuff. They had the same. Nobody had any down clothing. If it got cold, of course, didn't get cold. You know.
We had suggested that for Rome, but that didn't go over really well with the Italians.
Comes TR. He actually had these uniforms, these sort of ridiculous uniforms, and it was his sort of his own design. I mean, not the other guys, but his own uniform, the officer's uniform.
I question his vision, gentlemen. He thrashed a man in the Dakotas for calling him Four Eyes. Thrashed the fella? Thrashed.
I love grits. My mother was a southerner. She used to make grits every morning. When we were good and not misbehaving, she'd make us cheese grits.
In fact, that uniform, the one that he's wearing that we just used in another, not a production, but in a play, they did, some friends did a thing about Roosevelt, and Tom sent out his old uniform.
Your baggage. I see that wagons and mules are standing by.
And a bit of a problem with the older general.
Look at this guy. This guy had waited all his life to do this.
And he was very, very well known, of course, by then. I mean, he was as well known as Arnold as being, you know, running for governor, you know, or being governor, you know.
Yeah. See, his mother and his wife died on the same day within about 4 hours, 5 hours of each other. And it really broke his heart. He ended up going to the West at the time, the Dakotas.
And the West rebuilt him. The West became, you know, the core of his character.
There's a famous anecdote where some people stole a boat and he caught these guys, even though he wasn't elected the sheriff or appointed by anybody. He was just self-appointed. And
took them over this incredibly windswept, blizzard-swept expanse to, you know, the county seat. And everybody said, why didn't you just shoot him or hang him? And he says, well, because the rule of law must exist. He says, since I brought them here, you can try them and then hang them. But,
and that made him really a national figure. And then he became the commissioner of police.
Yeah, right? He became the New York commissioner of police and cleaned up New York.
He'd walk the beats at night with the guys all night. He did the first profiling.
Mm-hmm.
He had the first, he borrowed from the British, fingerprinting. This guy was a scientist, he was a linguist.
You won't be safe in civilized society. This day on, you are to become predators, wolves.
You will learn. All this time, you know, he was, you know, the only way, his only real income was from his books.
That's right. And he had a brood, he had, what, six kids?
Yeah, and he was rich, you know, he'd had some inheritance, which he'd blown, and you know, he was expected to live very well because he knew everybody, you know, and Henry Cabot Lodge and all of these people were his friends. And he was always broke because he didn't care about money.
But ever seen a bullfight? Spaniards enjoy bullfights.
You know, I just think the world of Sam Elliott. I mean, you know, you can watch him forever. He can do no wrong. He's one of those actors that never makes a mistake. I always wanted to do something with Sam, you know, so all I had to do was call him up, and he was ready to go.
900 Spaniards under Hernando Cortez killed 100,000 Aztecs. They did this with swords. And they raped all the women and took the gold.
Minstrel Boy become our troop song. You will learn it well. It will salve your souls. Trooper Smoke, we get him started, please, sir.
The minstrel boy to the war is gone. In the ranks of death you will find him. His father's...
In this sequence you just saw, it's the idea that he's trying to dehumanize the Spaniards. He's trying to say these... You know, Spaniards are cruel. They've done this. He's not saying these are they're weak. He's saying they're dangerous, cruel, you know, beasts. So they must be dehumanized because he wants these guys to become murderers. You know. And this is a great character here. The idea of these two journalists, you know, Stephen Crane. And the other guy's
Remington, right?
No, since Remington. Yes. See, he had Edward been in many wars, Marshall.
Of course you are. I read your book. Enjoy it. Almost as if you had been there. Which, of course, you haven't.
Did I make any mistakes?
A few.
I shall do better the next time.
If there is a next time. After all, it is dangerous work. But then again, I hear you have the luck of a drunk.
Maybe you could watch out for me.
Well, if there's anything that I can do, you just ask.
Perhaps you could suggest a good bordello.
See, all this stuff here was very difficult. You know, this is the kind of stuff they always want to cut out. You know, seeing him, just this little montage of him, you know, tending to equipment and stuff like that.
Right forward!
And this is what he did. He had asthma, so he'd get up in front of everybody at night, and he would practice giving commands. And he didn't care. He was just totally... Oh, I love this sequence.
Been taught since childhood to be patient, quiet, cruel. War is an argument. Best way to end the argument is to kill the other fellow. That's what you must become, a man killer.
Apaches are the greatest Indians. Of course, the Sioux are pretty good. I forgot about this stuff. I love the idea of the Apache there, just the whole, you know, thing. He's a good character.
You are now acting platoon sergeants. Yes, sir. Take over the troops, prepare to march. Sir, sergeant, move them out. Carry that down. Hide, post to the left! Sergeant Major, have some water.
Here you go, sir.
Load them cayuses on the train.
Ah!
too old for this. Too old for this.
I don't know about that, Captain. All I want is this train to get back by dinner.
See, that's what you try and do, is try and create an atmosphere where everybody, and actors, that's why they're actors, because they want to give themselves to it. And you try and create the same atmosphere that they would have. You want to be true to the circumstance. Everybody. It sort of wrote itself, you know, I tried to always give a quirky approach to it instead of them talking about, well, you create these characters and their little stories, but you try and stick as close to it as you can, because the true stories are always better than anything you're ever going to think up.
That son of a gun.
My feet hurt.
Get used to it.
Well, I'm hungry.
We didn't eat all day.
You goddamn right we didn't.
I ain't staying out here all night without a horse.
How about a race? The Elegance Columbia?
How about you shut up?
Andale, compadres. Do you want to starve? Move! Vámonos!
We had three locations in one day when we shot this scene, I remember. And I think this stuff, most of this stuff of them running around was second unit. You know, I was shooting the other stuff, and while they're taking, you know, people out to shoot second unit, of course I have, you know, the incomparable Terry Leonard, so I can trust him with enormous amounts of stuff that people normally couldn't. I give Terry dialogue to do with him, you know. Terry and I work really, really well together. You know, we've done this for a long time. So I can have, it's like being in two places at once, you know.
Do it now.
He's an expert with a knife, you know, young Quinn.
No, I don't think I will. Come on, Eli. You're gonna be good amigos, ¿me entienden?
Andale.
Commission Kane and Castillo. Leave Castillo where he is and put Kane in G Troop.
Very well, sir.
All in all, I'd say you're shaping up into an adequate officer.
He knew how to get everything for the regiment and how to deal with stuff that Wood didn't understand. This movie just is wonderful looking, and it's because, and I had a wonderful relationship with Tony Richmond, who's my cinematographer, and I didn't have to go look through the camera or anything. I would just go stand someplace, and I would describe what was going to happen, and he'd say, here's where, he knew that I was standing where I wanted the camera, and I would just describe what I wanted to have happen, and he knew exactly what I was going to do. He knew what Landis was to start with and everything else. And it was just a wonderful relationship. And I'm just amazed at how good this looks.
If anybody dies because of you, I'll have you pulled apart by horses. Understand? Savvy?
Look at that engine. There ain't nothing human about him. He don't even talk.
He ain't got nothing to say.
Well, he's a wild engine. What are you?
Sue.
You know, the ones that got Custer.
I have something personal to ask. Tell me the truth. You'll know otherwise. How many of you have ever killed a man? Come on, hands. Bill.
I might have got him. I mean, I might have got him.
C.B. DeMille had his own National Guard unit early on in the movie business, out in the valley, and it was his, really his private army. And he armed them with Krag carbines because they were probably cheap, you know. And they would go out there and they had cavalry and they'd, you know, they'd do cavalry exercise. I suppose he feared an invasion of Mexico, or, you know, maybe he was going to do something like, you know, attack Universal or something. Like
yeah.
That, you know. But anyway, he did. He had machine guns, which we use later, and these Krag rifles. And they actually made a movie of the Rough Riders in the probably in the 30s, but that was the last time those rifles were really used. They were just sitting there in bins. Very, very lucky to find those.
Yeah, some of the heavier stuff in the charge and came. Some of the reenactors brought some of their stuff.
Yeah,
they brought
really, really exotic artillery pieces.
And that, what was that? That Gatling.
That, yeah, that Hotchkiss revolving cannon. You know, there was it was mentioned in Roosevelt's book that there was a Hotchkiss revolving 37 millimeter Hotchkiss revolving cannon made of brass. Now, where are you going to get one of those? And so this artillery guy who brought the other cannons, he said, "What would you like?" And I said, "Well, you know, I'd like everything that was there, like a 37-millimeter Hotchkiss revolving cannon," because Roosevelt made such a big mention of that. He says, "I own one personally." Now, there must have been only six of them ever made, probably. He not only owned it, he fired it.
Bolt action. It fires. A modern, smokeless cartridge. You can fire this weapon at ranges accurately up to 1,000 yards. But this means to you, cowboy...
Stephen Crane, Captain.
Is you may not
from
see
the Journal.
Read your book.
Yards, you can shoot them with this
you liked
weapon.
It, I bet.
That is the Army way. That is the way we are going to teach you using the prone, the kneeling, and the offhand positions. I may not see the enemy at 1,000 yards, but if I see him at 900... Bye-bye.
Load one round. Ready? Fire!
This was the most high-tech thing you could have then at the time. This is the bolt-action, first bolt-action rifle. And it was interesting, they thought this was quite a high-tech thing, but the Spanish had the very first Mauser rifles, which were even more high-tech. And so they were kind of outclassed. That's why this rifle didn't last long in service.
You mean kill him?
How do you think Wes Harden and Clay Allison always got their opponents? They're better shots. Both men were drunken louts. They had the ability to murder their fellow man.
Now, what they did do was, as opposed to shooting at bullseyes, as you can see here, he wants to shoot at watermelons, and he's constantly trying to make what they're shooting at look like people. Once again, to desensitize them. And see, now he makes them go down, and if they miss, they have to go down and club the watermelon or whatever, because he wants to desensitize them. That's that, and that's really what has to be. I mean, if you're going to go to war, you've got to, you know, cross that line.
Colonel, what do you think of these men, these so-called Rough Riders?
I think the 1st United States Volunteer Cavalry could whip Caesar's 10th Legion. I think these men could ride with Genghis Khan. They are, without peer, the best of American manhood. We've got Indians, New York City policemen, football players, polo players, rowing champions.
No, it's been studied. There's a book after World War II by an Army general who's the Army's greatest historian, S.L.A. Marshall. And he went into this whole thing, what it takes and how people in battle won't fire their rifles at each other and stuff. And during the Civil War, they lined up and would just reload the rifles and, or shoot over other people's heads, even though they were in danger of being killed themselves and often were being killed themselves, you know. It's very hard for you. So they're very well aware in the training of how to desensitize people. That's why you have, you know, the racial derogatory as a thing, you know, like in World War II, it isn't even racial. I mean, you have the, you know, you're fighting Japs or you're fighting Krauts, or you're fighting Reds, you know, or something like that. I mean, it's always the idea of desensitizing the enemy.
Old Rosie remembered my name.
Sure did.
He remembered my name.
This is to wipe your nose with, not to wear around your neck. I see we're letting little boys in here now. What is this knife on this man's belt? Do you have a place setting to go with that knife, trooper?
No, Sergeant Major.
What is your name?
William Tiffany, Sergeant Major.
Tiffany? My grandma has a little dog named Tiffany. I need two men to clean up the horse crap from the freight cars. Where did you go to school?
Yale, Sergeant Major.
Oh, a lucky dog boy. Well, that explains the smell.
I didn't go to school.
You. Harvard, sir. I am not a sir. I am a sergeant major. I work for a living.
Sergeant major, sir.
Let's just have the two little rich boys clean out the horse crap from the freight cars. Their little handy's dirty.
Get out of here.
Sir, I'm conducting an inspection of the men.
I demand the courtesy of being addressed by my rank.
Beat it, sergeant.
Stand at ease, trooper. We'll still need the horse manure shoveled out of those cars. Two volunteers. Squad word.
Sir!
Dad!
Yes, sir.
Yes?
At ease.
It is with deep concern.
He's always getting this. Here's where they get their special armament. William Tiffany was the son of the established Tiffany family, and of course, the family, you know, still exists and still owns the Tiffany stores and everything. However, William Tiffany did not, as you can see later, did not get through this.
Our training here, troopers, is almost done. We'll be heading to Florida.
Well, the Spaniards, of course, had even better machine guns. They had German machine guns.
And German operators.
Yeah, German operators.
Dale?
Well, I love this scene. This is one of my favorite scenes. This has endeared me and made me a member of the Sioux tribe because of this scene.
G Troop, it has been an honor and a pleasure to train you. I only wish I could go with you. But my people are still prisoners of war. And I have pressing duties at Carlisle Indian Academy. You have made me proud. You have made yourselves proud. Good day. Good luck.
I love the way he says good hunting. He means it.
We get these people to Tampa right now or they're going to start shooting each other.
What's the matter with you people? You're soldiers!
Addies, man! Study them!
They're not civilians anymore! Take too long to act like this! They're going to Cuba to kill Spaniards!
Their barker sons, be not dismayed, then join with me, each jovial play, compose and sing and lingerie, and help me with the chorus. We'll break windows, we'll break doors, I'll watch.
That was my wife singing. I always love this sequence.
Instead of sprawl, we'll drift downhill and pay the reckoning on the nail. No man protection.
All right, Rough Rider!
souls give our hearts so stout. Have doth no fame or suit his bow. From whence we came, where'er we go, they dread the name of Gary Lee Glory. Instead of straw, we'll drink down ale and pay the reckoning.
The old Southerners and all the people coming to wish them on, and that they thought, you know, going through the South they would be booed and hooted. And it's the same thing. Because, you know, remember the rebel, the Civil War brought about the Southerner, the rebel was spit on, was, you know, treated horribly, and that's one of their most romantic images, is that of the rebel, you know. And of course, by this war, we realized we'd done such a terrible thing in the Civil War. So, you know, this war was so wholly supported by the populace.
Well, I'll introduce you. Captain, sir.
That would be lovely, dear. People on the back east. Does sound silly.
Yes.
These are important issues.
Yeah, see, now, Gary Busey, you know, wanted these guys, the plane behind, to be playing Get Down tonight.
That's pretty typical.
He came and whispered that in my ear. Down, because they'd be playing Get Down tonight, you know.
He has such a booming voice, though, you know, and you would hear in the various hotels occasionally, and the guests would go, what is that sound next door? And he'd be off on some tangent, because he's a very excitable and very energetic fellow. These are some pretty colorful characters, you know, and some of them would stay kind of in role and goof around with things. It was great to watch them.
I truly was not prepared for the sight of you.
I look well?
Oh, we did. Ravishing. I suggest that we adjourn to our room before dinner.
Thea, after all these years of marriage...
Yes, I'm talking now!
But Thea just got here.
You've been here an hour.
Ileana looks... Because she really looks like a character from another time. You know, she doesn't look like a... She looks like some actress from the 30s or 40s, doesn't she?
Does.
Thank you.
Whew. You look fit, Theodore.
I am fit, Edith. I am very fit.
Do you know, on the way down here, the Southern people wave flags at the train. Little American flags. They gave the soldiers coffee with molasses and sweets, and the soldiers gave the girls their buttons. It was really...
Oh, remarkable. Let's turn to our room.
One of the things I did was, you know, I trained them very carefully with the weapons, you know, and... You know, there were very strict rules about how to handle weapons and everything. And I said, you know, nobody crosses anybody else with a gun or something like this. You know, it wasn't just, here's a gun. You can shoot. Matter of fact, when I look at this, I can see mistakes. I can see people shooting in the wrong place or something because I have a trained eye for that. I can see that they're shooting too high or something. But, you know, and I can see when they're on and all this kind of stuff. But when... One of the things I did do, as I said, there will be a day after we're finished training where we will have a live fire exercise with real bullets. And you will advance in front of your comrades who will be shooting over you. And, you know, leapfrogging from position to position shooting. Now, that's a very dangerous thing to do with actors, actually. They had zones of fire, so they weren't really shooting over each other. So they knew what the gun felt like, and they knew what it was to have a real gun, so they were never going to treat this thing as a toy or treat this thing as a movie prop again. They were never going to make a mistake. They were never going to run around with a gun when they didn't know it was loaded. They were going to check. They were always going to have it on safety because... They, you know, had been around in a real situation, you know? And they knew what they felt like too. The whole idea was to always make them know exactly what these guys felt like.
Been with these Negro soldiers for a long time. They call me Black Jack. These men would follow me into hell, and I couldn't ask for better company.
Well, you can appreciate that my men are somewhat unrefined. Not quite housebroken.
Sir, we will accept no breach of military behavior.
Wouldn't ask for that. You and your sergeant care to have a little sip of bourbon whiskey with me?
It's a dry county, sir.
But would you like some?
This is great, he says.
Between the fighting men.
Now, this is the young General Pershing. Blackjack Pershing.
I don't see that would be...
A breach of military behavior?
Exactly, sir.
I don't either.
Sergeant Buck.
Yes, sir.
You care to refresh yourself?
I've had water earlier today, sir.
Would you care to refresh yourself?
Refresh myself? I would, sir.
That was the nature of Pershing. He was very, very strict. Captain, if you don't mind my asking. Always.
Well, this actor, too, is a pretty intense old guy.
Yeah, he's a man. Marshall Teague is sort of the same way.
Somewhat unconventional.
See, he never smiles.
He'd be understood in that light. Ice cream parlor.
Yes, sir.
Must you really go?
I could hardly spend the night in a hotel while my men sleep on the ground.
It might be the last night we...
And see, his relationship with her was interesting because he depended on her so much. He tested everything. He told her everything. And he was, you know, of course, I don't know how many children they had. He obviously was very attracted to her. But he did, you know, she once said, well, you must understand, you know, about the president. And she said, what's that, Ms. Roosevelt? The president is six. I have my other children, and I have him. He is perpetually six.
Don't take us seriously.
You're setting me up, aren't you?
I have no idea of what you might mean, Mr. President.
All right, you sons of bitches. Do it.
I like this thing here.
Pass this along, Admiral.
Richard, send this.
Yes, sir.
War Department of 5th Corps. Headquarters, commence offensive operations immediately.
Oh, this is a great scene. There's the three biggest scene hogs having it out. Watch this.
Here's half the battle.
Where'd you get fresh hog?
Where, sir? Where must we get to first?
The boat. But there's not enough of them, so do you want to swim to Cuba?
These guys are just working.
Caught the gator and the snake.
Snake?
Footless animal stew, sir.
You're on transport with the 71st New York. There's only room for one regiment, and it better be yours. The 71st just found out about this like you. They're over at Tampa Heights. Now, I have never seen a Yankee infantry get up and march 9 miles in less than a day.
Aha! But we will be mounted.
No, no, what? You ain't taking any horses. You're dismounted cavalry.
Look at this. This is really something.
He's drinking it out of a jug.
That's shine. You show some discipline, Roosevelt.
Yes, sir.
If you want to fight, it's going to be on foot.
Yes, sir.
Cook, get me some more of this serpent. Some of that, Mr. Hogg.
My pleasure, sir.
Why don't you take a train?
General Joe, we don't have the use of a train.
Commandeer one! Sons of men, God! Form the regiment! Douglas! Sound officers, clap!
This, and we shot this at the end of a day. We shot two other locations before we shot this. And I sent Terry ahead to line up all this and shoot a lot of this stuff. That's a pretty shot.
That's beautiful, isn't it?
Colonel!
Lieutenant, stop that train!
Move out! Hold it right here! Hold it! Train and track! Train and track!
Now, this is from morning till dark and beyond. We used every moment of light to do this.
He's going for the port. They're going to take our boat.
It's my ship, Roosevelt! You can't do this to me!
He basically hijacked the train.
Yeah, they hijacked the train. They took his train. Look at, they're mooning him.
Yeah.
It's the quirky human stuff, like him stealing the train, that makes it interesting. You know, I mean, he barely got there. I mean, you know, and he was willing to do it. I mean, and that's sort of the spirit of the Rough Riders, which is sort of in between the lines in his book. I mean, these guys were like the Dirty Dozen. You know, it was like a great big. I mean, nobody wanted them to really go and do this.
The expeditionary forces landed.
Well, it says here there was no losses.
It was a circus, as far as I can tell.
If one company of Spaniards had opposed them, they'd all be dead. We'd still be a third-rate agricultural experiment. Well, God takes care of drunks and madmen in the American Army. Hearst said it was a... He said it looked like a yachting party. Where are the Spaniards? Because they landed at Thackeray.
Thackeray? Isn't that a new summer cocktail?
Now you're getting the idea, Mr. Hay.
This was really tough because we had to do something for Cuba. And it really does look like Cuba here. And what it was, what that was a lake. I probably shouldn't be telling these trade secrets. You know? But that was a lake. And it really does look like the Caribbean, doesn't it?
Yeah, and this is their first encounter, really, with the enemy, right? This is that...
No, yeah, this is later.
Can any of you tell me where those Spanish bastards are?
I can.
Well, then speak up.
I can show you where all the bastards are. You'll get us some food, okay?
Momentigo, soldaje. Major Funston, General. These are my men.
Are you an American?
A soldier of fortune.
Soldier of fortune, my ass. You work for the State Department.
He was the first spook. He was a CIA man.
Just this.
And don't think you can put anything over on me, Mr. Funston. Because I am a United States congressman.
I want to see some Spaniards, you say?
That's why I'm here. Can't you get us some food or what? Oh, my God. I'll see what I can do. Get a requisition to quartermaster and get these guys some food right now.
Yes, sir.
You stay here. I'll be right back. And don't lose them Spaniels.
Yes, sir.
Spaniels.
Spaniels, yeah, Bill.
Don't lose them Spaniels. I'm going to teach you boys how to boat. But that really does look like
it's not coming ashore.
Not until tomorrow. If the sea is very, very calm.
And they get a bigger boat.
It must be General Shafter. He's too big to land.
Oh, this wasn't bad at all because we were living in San Antonio. And this wasn't that far from San Antonio, so we had nice motels and hotels. It's actually very, very nice in San Antonio. When we were living up in Palestine, we just had one motel, you know. But we did have a very, very fine barbecue across the street.
We'll fix the Rough Riders in the tent, the Buffalo Soldiers, and bring him back to that fella Funston up on the hill. I'll meet you there and make no fuss.
Yes, sir.
These fellas don't know what the hell they're doing.
Take way up ahead. Dismounted cavalry coming through. Theodore, take us up the hill.
Yes, sir.
I love these characters, these two guys.
He's the politician, you know. Wheeler is the politician, right. So he knew there was some...
I like it where these guys figure it out, too.
I think Wheeler is exceeding his authority. Could lead to an interesting disaster.
It'd lead to an interesting disaster. There's the Rough Riders.
Let's go along.
No, you go.
I have a bottle of rum and I can celebrate with one of these Cuban insurrectas.
Insurrectas,
yeah.
When the time comes, I'll walk toward the sound of the guns.
Good hunting.
And to you, sir.
We did a lot of the green lighting ability of this thing, Berenger was very instrumental in, because he'd done Gettysburg. Actually, our company had done it. And he had a very close relationship with Ted Turner at the time, who was really the proponent of these historic epics on TNT. One of the things that Tom did at the beginning of this show was present Ted in Atlanta with a particular kind of pistol. I don't know exactly, you probably know what it was, but it was because we were kind of hoping to loop Ted back into this in some capacity, being the media mogul and the fact that, you know, Hearst had been responsible, give you the pictures, I'll give you the war and this kind of stuff. And in the end, for whatever reason, it was green-lit. The guy that was running the studio at the time was not particularly pleased with the original budget, and because it was, at the time, very expensive for TNT, and they were trying to do things a little cheaper. So in the end, it was really John and Tom and myself really just pounding this guy to the point where we said, look, this is going pretty much.
Yeah. I mean,
we've got, as he started assembling more of the cast, and virtually everyone got the phone out to help with some of the casting. It's very hard with these historic things. Very, very difficult, as witnessed with Rome. The marketing is very difficult because a lot of people don't know who Teddy Roosevelt is. They don't know who the Rough Riders are. They don't know, you know, the rank and file people can't find the United States on a world globe. I mean, we've got an educational problem in this country. But
there is a tremendous amount of people that are interested in history, evidenced by the fact that we have reenactors that get together and do these things all the time. So there's a lot of people that don't want to live in their time and that love, like me, they love hearing history. And there's a place for that. There's obviously enough of them, you know. 36 million people saw this, so there's obviously a place for that.
Absolutely. The trick here in this community is that this is not a particularly politically correct motion picture. I mean, it's the adolescence of the empire, and it's when it really starts to flex its muscles, and Teddy's the guy that's leading the charge, literally and figuratively.
But it also, this particular war was a classic American war, because what it was, as he says later in dialogue, it was the classic war of the American coming to help the little guy, the oppressed,
right.
You know, the oppressed Cuban, you know, who's being stepped on, you know, by the jackbooted foot of the Spaniard. You know?
And you see that at the beginning.
And that's what we've always had as an excuse for our wars, you know. It's a good excuse.
Well, that's why he had that newspaper article in the very beginning, that montage in the beginning of where it says Spanish rape Cuban women. I mean, that was one of the great igniters of this whole kind of movement.
There was that wonderful, drawing by Remington of the Spaniards, you know, inspecting a naked woman, having to, you know, one is searching her. And you know, here's this beautiful naked woman's form, and these guys all leaning around her, you know, like, these are beasts, you know, we must go in there and stop this. And I mean, that's when the phrase yellow journalism was born.
Troops, DNF, follow me. One in the chamber, safety's on.
This is good what he does here, because he was such a bird fancier, but a bird watcher and ornithologist and everything. So it's a good little scene when he recognizes the bird call.
Joe Spaniard. Let's get across.
Listen to this. This is good.
Listen, brush cuckoo. Or is it the West Mediterranean thrush?
And he figures out suddenly that the West Mediterranean thrush shouldn't be here. He should be in the West Mediterranean.
Yeah.
See, there he sees something that's a broken leaf there, a broken stem.
Now, that's a West Mediterranean thrush.
native of the coast of Catalonia.
So he knows they're out there.
Because they're using a Spanish bird as a call. You know, as a communicator.
I tried to do in this particular fight here is that you see how confused everything is, and that nobody really knows where anybody is. They're, the Spanish are hard to see.
Oh, it got the both of us.
Badly wounded.
Well, you see them, Captain? Whatever I see, we're here.
I should continue to fight. Just pull it. Eli, my friend, are you all right?
I'm all right.
Fish. That's the way he really died. They had a very, you know, that was an account that was very graphic, that he, just like that. We tried to use history wherever possible. We tried to use the real stuff whenever possible.
He was pretty. That was a pretty famous family at the time. The Fish family had been big State Department people in the colonial times, and they were a well-known political clan.
There's been quite a bit written, number of books written about this particular, these two battles since then, and they've dug up letters and things like that.
Well, and this was so well covered by the press. This was, I mean, those guys are sort of embedded with these guys. Those
they were the original embedded reporters.
Pick your head.
Then, see, it wasn't a matter of, like, embedded reporters today where they're trying to get the scoop on some terrible disaster, somebody shooting some, you know, guy who's trying to, you know, feign death or something like that. And this was, they wanted to be there when this great victory happened or something, or they wanted to be there right in the middle of the disaster. And, you know, Stephen Crane would always expose himself to fire because he didn't care if he died. He was dying of tuberculosis anyway.
We want to get back at them?
You bet, sir. Right, sir.
Tie up to the right! Keep firing, lads! Get out!
He actually did fall over a saber there. That's actually true.
So
he
typical
tripped
Teddy.
Over his saber. And, you know, anyone else would have been terribly embarrassed and everything. TR didn't care. Nothing, you know, stopped him. He definitely saw the big picture.
Without informing me, and I could not stop. The record will show that I tried.
Disperse, boys. Keep your distance out there.
We held them all.
Now, he's a pretty headstrong guy in his own right. He's Tom, yeah, he definitely has an opinion about things. And is
Tom, which people don't know about him, is an extraordinary historian.
Yes.
I mean, Tom's the best historian I know in the whole world on the Revolutionary War.
He's very good at the Civil War, too.
Yeah, very good at the Civil War, but on the Revolutionary War, he's without peer, you know. And he knew this stuff. He'd read just about everything I'd read.
Displace that machine gun forward.
Yes, sir!
Yeah, he loved doing it, you know. You don't get to do this kind of stuff. I mean, I could do movies about T.R. for the rest of my life, you know. I mean, I could have done it my whole career. I would have been happy to have made, you know, 8 movies about T.R., you know.
Well, he had toyed with the concept of doing the third one, because he did Women and Lion, because there's a...
I really still want to do that. I really, really want to do young T.R. So I'd also like to do one about his presidency.
Forward, Nate Brody.
He's dead! He's dead! Colonel's dead! Retreat! Retreat! He's dead! Colonel One's dead! Stop the advance!
Forward, boys.
It was a big adventure for these guys.
Yeah,
too,
they
you know?
Really enjoyed this.
Yeah.
Of course, we all did.
Yeah. Great.
We certainly had what you call a esprit de corps.
That's right.
Out of here! Kick him in the ass!
I will, sir! I'm going to go find Roosevelt! Come on!
This Marshall actually recounted this particular incident very, very well. I remember I took this right out of his dispatches, where they see the Spaniards crossing on the other side of a river like this. And it was just like this, where most of these guys had not fired on anyone before. And they just see these guys walking along, which happens like many times in war, where they're not aware of each other. See, and the embedded reporter with his pistol. And see, the other thing I tried to show here is that here they're all prepared, they shoot, they hit a couple of them, but they don't slaughter them all like they do in most movies. It's hard to hit somebody, you know.
As skirmishers extend to the right.
Lieutenant, casualties?
Kane, he's dead.
Colonel! Hi, sir.
They just hit a couple of them. They get, you know, the other guys have shot back, too. And then you just move on.
Poor man. Move on.
Spaniels are everywhere. They've been ambushed and been sidewalked.
Sir!
Whoa!
Colonel Wood is dead and his command ambushed and surrounded.
Bull Pucky!
I just left Colonel Wood. He and his boys are kicking hell out of them Federals.
Federals.
Spaniards, sir.
Federals.
I love this, that he's almost rabid here.
He's a disgrace to the uniform, and he should be kept...
He would shoot him.
You running again, you son of a bitch.
He's running again.
See, he's out of ammunition. He was going to shoot him.
Now pay attention. Them Yankee Spanish rifles don't make any smoke, so they're hard to find. But we are finding them. We are killing them. We are advancing. Hey, you get your blue belly and happy up off that goddamn beach and tie into the right and turn the flank on these bastards. Then we'll get the fox back in the hen house.
I've known Busey forever, and so... when I read that part, I said, who would be really outrageous to play that part? Really give that color, and I thought immediately of Bruce.
He's terrific in this film, though, I think. I mean, he is that blustery, over-the-top, yeah. Southern. I thought he was...
He objected. He said, well, that man was 60 years old. I can't play somebody 60 years old. What will people think of me? I said, sooner or later, Gary, even you will be 60 years old. This is a friendly fire incident where they're both advancing along parallel to one another.
If that's accurate, that's accurate as well, huh?
Yeah. This area where this was filmed is interesting because I cut my way in there, remember, with a machete, and I just got to the densest stuff I could find, and there were a million things in there that would bite me.
Looks pretty good for Cuba, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. Looks just like Borneo.
And I'm an American!
Major Funston! I can't take it back. We're all going to the same place. Let's go there together. G-Troop! Fast skirmishers on the devil!
Buenos! Adelante!
Echo through?
I would assume so. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, now this is a great thing here, is that he has turned coward and
yeah.
running for it. And he ran away from him.
And now he gets stuck here.
He thought he was running away, and he'd abandon his buddies.
Yeah, because this is a big arc. This guy goes through probably the greatest transformation in the whole movie.
See, and he hears the shooting. They're shooting at him. He didn't know where he was going. And what he's done is run around the flank of the enemy. He doesn't know it. He's just terrified.
Bastards!
See, these guys are now, they're coming up onto the Spanish positions, and they will have to attack right into those positions in a frontal assault.
Lieutenant Pershing!
See, Pershing's on his side, there on one side.
And he's got all his 10th Cavalry. That's all the Buffalo soldiers.
Right.
The guys that ultimately rescue Teddy on top of the hill.
See, he says he has his right of line. And now his buddies have come, thinking that he'd led them there, and come streaming by and attack the Spaniards.
What were the total casualties in this splendid little war?
Well, there was, you know, this unit, the Rough Riders, had fairly severe casualties, I think about 40%.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So, you know, more people died, actually, of the Yellow Jack.
Much more, because they stayed there. They would have been wiped out altogether if it wasn't for Roosevelt making a stink about it and bringing them back.
Yeah, and then they even kept them off, I think, Long Island or someplace
on
a boat.
Yeah, they kept them in Montauk.
Montauk, that's right.
Careful, boys! Fine! Careful, boys!
I mean, he knows what Brad Johnson has done. He knows that he...
deserted, yeah.
Yeah, he deserted.
Ah!
exactly the same thing. It was the precursor for World War I, where two-thirds of the combatants died of various diseases. Tetanus and flu.
See, he says there, the Rough Riders have turned the flank. It was their great... Oh, well, they've justified themselves.
Roll that, boys! Follow me to the forward!
Let's go, boys, quick!
Did it, Nash! You did it!
You turned their flank.
I did?
I will get you a medic. Marshal. Where's my saber, man?
Theodore!
I'm afraid I've left it.
Stand by, Buffalo soldiers! Make ready! Colonel Roosevelt!
Left it.
Theodore! Right and left wing! Fight troops in echelon! Action front! Out to contact! Advance!
Look at that order. It's so long. You know, advance to contact.
He can't remember.
He does what he's famous for.
That's right. After all that memorization. Yeah. I mean, the guy did have a great self-effacement, Teddy. That, you know.
Yeah. This charge.
So, John, go back to the what this war's effect had on the military.
Yeah, because this was the first war with where there was a lot of modern stuff that people didn't pay attention to, like the machine gun. The lesson they overcame, as you see in the later Battle of San Juan Hill, they overcame the machine guns. And the British and the French were watching and everything. And the machine gun was very effective here where they used it. But they didn't realize what the machine gun would really do. The Germans did. They got the message from this and various other things. And this was the war that where the U.S. was seen as suddenly a factor to be counted, and you know that no matter what happened throughout the world, they're going to have to deal with the U.S. now. Oh, this is good. I like where he meets Stephen Crane here.
He's on a run.
The Spaniards, sir, the Spaniards, and they fall back on the prepared position.
Don't spoil it, sir. Don't spoil it. Hot damn! Come on, son! How'd you get here?
I walked, sir.
Shouldn't you be back with the other correspondents?
They don't like my company, and I slept late.
What's wrong with you?
I'm a narcotics user and a drunk. And I don't give a damn.
Oof. Well, yes. Then good luck to you, son.
Good luck, damn it.
He certainly understands that. He's already TB, dying of TB.
Ain't dead.
And, I believe about over 30 wounded. Theodore, those casualties are regrettable, but acceptable. This is an important position.
Now, we almost got into a war in 1902. TR came a week away from sending Dewey to attack the Germans off of Venezuela. And German fleet, which we would have destroyed their fleet. They'd have sent a bigger fleet and destroyed ours and invaded New York. Here's the whole thing about the Mauser.
7mm.
There's a big issue here about the fact that theirs were smokeless, right?
Yeah, that was a much better rifle, too.
You know, also the American, in answer to that question, you know, the American fleet then essentially forced the Spanish fleet to surrender in the Philippines.
Yeah.
And that essentially established the first beachhead for Americans in Asia, which obviously led to all sorts of complications.
Well, you mean in the fleet in the Philippines?
Yes, in the Philippines.
Yeah. And we inherited the Philippines. We took the Philippines, and we had the whole Filipino War, which was the precursor to Vietnam in many ways.
My bad.
Find El Pozo Hill on that map, Captain Letta. That's where we're going. Let the infantry dig in. Find out what General Wheeler's got in mind.
Yes, sir.
What's your name, trooper?
Harry Hefner of Galton, New Mexico. Could you tell my folks how this came to pass?
You see war around you all the time. You go into any company and you'll see war. You go into any corporation is at war. You know, it's at war within the corporation. You know, mankind will compete with himself, and, you know, very rarely does he get along with himself. Well, he just was seeing the cost of war. What this, you know, that these, it's now personal to him. You know, that these men, are, you know, that he knows are dying. It's hers. Look at that beautiful engraved rifle. That beautiful girl. The bananas. The cigar being made on this girl's thigh. He had the best time of his life during this thing. Hearst did. He never wore shoes during the whole thing. Went totally native. So did Remington.
Oh, shut up, Freddy.
Me and Remington were great buddies.
But it's not true.
Truth is the first casualty.
George Hamilton was a friend of mine for a long time. I always thought George was very good. He's never been used properly. I mean, if I was going to have somebody be Hearst, I thought of him.
And gleaming helmets of the Spanish.
Nash. You did well, Henry. You mentioned in dispatches.
Nash? What did he do?
He turned the flag.
I'll be damned.
Will he get a medal?
It was a strange thing. It was a... It was a blinking yellow light until it was really green. We didn't have a budget on the movie until at least two-thirds of the way through it. We'd never signed off on a budget. And the guy that ran the place, we kept saying, the more you delay, the more you're costing us because you can't prepare certain things because you haven't allocated it. And we'd go in there every couple of weeks and say, or every, actually, once a week and say, you know, now we're at X and we're going to be 10% more in 2 weeks if you don't sign off on this now, because you got to go do all this other stuff. And they kept sort of procrastinating, and ultimately I think we signed a budget in the maybe the 38th day or something of filming.
Like
it was a long way and deep in this thing.
This is a good scene. I really like this stuff with...
I always loved that, though, that part of the production, because it was very Rooseveltian. You just press on.
Yeah.
This thing was like a train. It was going.
Yeah. And I paid little attention to any of it. And, you know, I had to compress things and change things around because of the schedule being, you know, we had no margin for error. And so when we lost a day because of that film being exposed, and we lost the day because of rain or something like that, I had to, you know, they weren't given back to me. I had to just make them up.
And you were rewriting, too.
Yeah, and so I had to rewrite things and compress them. So I remember the script girl and the you know, producer would come and they'd say, well, what scene number? I said, I don't know what scene number it is. She said, well, how will you get this thing written? I said, well, I wrote it the first time. You know, I write it again. You know? I'm writing it now. You know, I'll write it when I'm there.
There's nothing manly about it. I'm filled with guilt. I feel sick. Foul. I feel dirty. Well, you think too much, Wadsworth.
He's good. You're both of them really good here.
All of us are guilty. You're not special. You're right. You're right. And I'll get what's coming to me.
I like how he says, I've got what's coming to
we
me.
We all do.
Officer on the billet!
Settle down there. Take the horse for me.
Persian, my compliments on your color trips.
Well, the only rewriting was when I got into trouble, see, where the schedule is in trouble. And normally what happens then is the director goes, oh, my God, what are we going to do? Get the writer. Well, we didn't have that problem, you know. And so I just rewrote it right there and stayed. And by doing that, I was able, I mean, they would love to have taken things away from me, you know, because we'd fallen behind or something. So I had to make it up in order to keep things.
I should have known better. I was just nervous and uncertain.
Oh, come now, Leonard.
Theodore,
tell us about your saber.
Well, it's kind of like a battle, you know. You have to adjust everything as you go along. You
just... Yeah. I mean, I love what we call the fog of war. You know, the fog of war is that nothing goes according to plan. And I love that. I look forward to the fog of war. That's when things get interesting. You know, as they say, the same symbol in Chinese for crisis is the same symbol for opportunity.
It was a probe and a combined assault. And we don't want those damn Yankee generals having anything on us now, did we, gentlemen?
No, sir.
No, sir. No, sir.
He continues to refer to them as Yankees. I just love that.
And a very large Cuban snake, sir.
Ooh, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm going to eat in the dark so I can't see what I'm eating.
By George, I love that old gentleman. He's a regular gamecock.
And he falls over here onto the bodies.
Get off your back. My apologies, Colonel. I was overcome by mirth.
Rather callous, isn't it? Laughing while Catherine and Fish lie dead.
Why don't you take a picture?
Everybody feels that they're a veteran of this movie. Of course, we certainly felt like veterans of Apocalypse Now, too. Yeah. That was a different thing. No, nobody would want to go do that again. They all hung out together, and you know, and we tried to encourage that, you know, that they would spend time talking about their stuff, and I always try and encourage them to, you know, just totally get into it and never leave their part, you know. You know, it's kind of the very thing that that an actor wants to do.
You see it, son?
Hell, I can't see a damn thing from here.
Stretching south of the San Juan Heights.
It's all fortified. Rifle pits. Those damn German guns.
Krupp batteries and Maxim rapid fire guns, sir. We believe they are manned by German advisors.
What do you suggest, Lawton?
Artillery. And a broad assault. Artillery, that's always the only answer.
You, sir, don't have any artillery. And you, General, has malaria to contend with. And if you don't do something fast, we're all going to die right here in this place.
Yeah, that was a major concern there.
General was every day that goes by, people are going to get sick.
He's already got malaria.
General Wheeler is correct, sir. We must assault. There was a relief column from Havana 3 days out. Now is the time, sir, while the rain lets up. You all right, sir?
Hell no, I'm not all right.
For God's sake, somebody get this man to the hospital before he infects all of us. And Young, you and Lawton, draw up a plan.
We have already taken the opportunity, sir.
Have Wood take the brigade.
Well, who'll take his regiment?
Roosevelt.
We brought in another production company that would guarantee the completion of the thing, and that's what got us rolling a little bit faster. And then really he just hauled us down there with Dale Dye and threw these guys in this boot camp, and by the time
from then on it was just like, you know,
it was a juggernaut and it was going.
It was just a matter of doing it.
Well, it shouldn't last long.
I was just concerned that I was out there that I would have enough ammunition.
Right.
That means it's going to be bad, doesn't it, Colonel?
I don't rehearse that much. If they're ready to go, they go. Matter of fact, we had kind of a rule on this. I said, we have no money. We have no time. We have, I want everybody to do their performances in 2 takes. I said, I'll give you 16 takes if you need it. But the word is 2 takes. And if you don't get it in 2, that's okay. But what I did was I created peer pressure. So that people would go to the other actors. See, you took 3 takes, didn't you, to do that? And, there's something that happens very interesting if you have, the 2-take rule. Now, it's not the best way to do things, but in this case, we had to. But the actors really, really rehearsed themselves, so they really knew their stuff when they got there. And second of all, when you do things quickly, 2 or 3 takes, you get a certain spontaneity.
That's not too much to ask now.
It's not.
I mean, look at the caliber of these guys, though. I mean, these are such seasoned characters. I mean, they knew. There wasn't anybody that showed up and didn't know their lines and things like that.
As long as they know what they're doing, they're not sitting there saying, "What am I doing here? How do I do this?" If they know what they're doing, they're gonna be okay.
Well,
yeah, and also they could come to me, and I knew what they were doing. Now there's a scene right there. See that piece of corrugated metal? We just found that outside there, and it was raining, so we put a tarp up and shot this under the tarp in a parking lot. Put a bunch of bushes in there, and you think you're out there in Cuba at night, don't you?
I buy it.
Closest thing to father I'd ever known. I sure as hell won't let you down.
And this scene is the same thing. This is the other side of that tarp. Same parking lot.
Woodbury, I was wondering what the men think.
This is good. This is a good scene.
Why they think we are here.
Yeah, here they're questioning why they're there.
Some think we're here to liberate the oppressed. Others, some say it's to make Cuba safe for purchase, for the good of the sugar investors and tobacco interests.
And we're making it safe for purchase. He doesn't care as long as it's the regiment.
Io no, signore. Perdonami. But I believe, signore. I see how these people look at me. I look into their eyes, and I know what they expect. And I like to think that when some little compañero is hungry and being kicked, and his woman is being taken by men with boots, he too will believe that un americano like me will come to help them and make things right.
Is it worth dying for?
Hamilton Fish thought so, sir. And I hope it wasn't for the good of the sugar market.
I'm ashamed to admit this, sir. But I'm glad that it was him and not me. But I assure you that I will collect the debt from the Spaniards for the lives of Cabernet and Fish.
We all will. I'm more alive now than I ever was. I intend to stay that way.
Colonel, sir.
Captain O'Neill.
Yeah, this is the middle of the day. It's raining outside.
Not at all.
I procured this jug of whiskey. I'd like to propose a toast, gentlemen.
It looks steamy, though, doesn't it? Don't they look nice and hot and they're in a jungle?
It looks the same as if it were night, Maybe we shot one of those three scenes at night. Looked just the same.
They would be killed, wounded, or promoted.
Here, here.
Reenactor Buffalo soldiers were very proud because, you know, that was the great black unit. There was no black units in the Army other than that, you know. And the ones who reenact it now were very proud of that unit. They were very sharp, very strack, very fit. And, of course, these guys had trained themselves to a ragged edge, the G troops. So there was a lot of competition, and it was very good, healthy competition. The Buffalo soldiers were outstanding.
Great horsemen.
Great horsemen, but just a good group of people, you know, the ones, I mean, they came with all of their equipment. They knew what to do. They're, you know, and Marshal Teague, you know, who's, you know, a fanatic anyway, they took to him right away, you know, and he had them.
He's the fellow playing blackjack person.
Yeah. He really had them up to an edge.
Now, the rest of the reenactors are an interesting lot, you know, because they come from all over America. And they basically vacation by way of these movies. Mm-hmm. And they form themselves in regiments and columns, and going just to the lunch each day, they march their way back down the thing. And they're very critical about these certain kinds of, whether the guy's carrying the right. I remember two guys got in an argument about the bugle, the song, said that wasn't what the 71st New York played. They played this, and
which is great to have people around. Each one is a historian. What's good about that is it keeps the prop men and everything from handing them the wrong gun or the wrong hat and stuff like that. It's very good.
Yeah, there were some of them I remember that had beards that, you know, and there was this big debate about whether in this era they wore beards or not, and clearly they didn't, and they'd shave them off, and but they didn't really, it was unbelievable. They'd turn to a buckle and say, you know, that's the inappropriate buckle. Yeah. So that's actually from 1882, not 1898, and you should really change that, sir, you know.
These things. One was chewing on my leg before.
It's the smell. They likes to smell.
Take the money, Henry. Take my share of the money.
But we had our 80 men that we trained, and then we had probably another 60 Rough Rider reenactors, you know, that were brought in later to work with them. And then we had the Buffalo soldiers, and then we had our
Artillery guys, those
kind
of. Yeah,
and then a whole artillery contingent, and then all the stuntmen who were playing Spaniards would play anything.
We all gonna get it.
Stop saying that!
Say that General Wheeler got the fever.
See, this was the big problem here, was the disease.
Yeah. This guy's a very good actor. He was a local actor, just outstanding. But, I mean, look at how good some of these guys are that were just like him in particular.
And this is pretty much out in the middle of nowhere. This is Banderas.
Oh, God, you remember Shiloh? You remember what I did to Shiloh?
Yes, sir, I do.
Shiloh, he's talking about.
Calm down, sir. You need to sleep.
Yes, I need to sleep.
Yes, sir.
There's a battle going on, you idiot. Come on, let's go.
Quite a few people recover or go in and out of fever, you know?
If it's malaria, they had dysentery, they had everything going on down here. But that yellow fever was the one, what they called Yellow Jack.
The Yellow Jack, yeah.
When they knew they had to get in and get out of here, the longer they stayed, the more they were going.
See, now here they're putting out the Maxim.
See, those are German
machine guns, and those are German Krupp cannons.
And German officers there, as you know.
And the technology here was, you know, this is a big advance that over what anybody else had.
And I can't remember, was all that armament, did that come with the reenactors, or did we actually rent those?
No, we rented them. See, they were up on the hill there, and they were able to, the Germans figured out, that they could fire not directly at the American positions, but fire indirectly, and it would be just a rain of bullets with a machine gun. It would just rain bullets. And same with their cannons. There's that 37-millimeter revolving cannon. Just unbelievable. Look at the thing there. And then the guy made the shells.
That's
for
the operator, too. That's the reenactor, the guy operating.
Yeah.
He finally, we had somebody, the TNT people came down with the CNN people, and he cleared a chamber in front, while this woman was giving an interview, and I think probably permanently deafened her. The damn thing went off.
This is a big artillery duel here.
Yeah.
This was really quite a big deal that they. Hearst was wounded, and what's his name? Leonard Wood was unhorsed. This artillery duel went on for quite a while, and the other side really won it.
And this is on a ranch of a very nice, sort of sophisticated couple.
Yeah.
Who were having a sort of a picnic at the main house here with a bunch of their friends, kind of showing off that the movie's going on. And of course, we just destroyed the ranch for a while here.
No, they really liked it.
They did love it, though.
Yeah.
But they were all very much like sort of cravat type rancher, you know, the gentleman rancher type with the very proper sort of town and country wife and their buddies. And they were just having a ball.
I mean, General, sir. I'm sorry. Lawton and Young should have taken El Caney by now. They'll turn the flank of these heights, and we'll conduct a frontal assault.
I assure you, sir, that our regiment shall
not embarrass... Your regiment, Theodore. Your regiment.
Yes, sir.
Good luck, my old friend.
God be with you, Leonard.
These are yours now. Do them honor.
I don't even remember how you found the location, but the location...
The location, we looked at a topographical map and found two hills that resembled the, you know, the height,
distance... But really almost identical.
You know, and we were within feet, in some cases, of the real hills.
Right.
And we just looked throughout that area until we found those, and then we went to the rancher and said, you have to, now they're covered with trees. So he says, I'll take the trees off. And so we groomed the hills to be exactly like all the pictures we saw of San Juan Hill. And the distance from this trench or this wash to San Juan Hill was the exact distance they went.
And they put an acetate overlay of the original hill on a photograph of this thing, and I tell you, it was within a percent.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of freaky how it all really worked out.
The idea was to, you know, to do this, to do it as real as you can. I mean, you kind of get really taken with it after a while.
Hey, girls, steady now. We've been through this before.
Our cast was 60-some speaking parts.
That caisson goes up, right?
Yeah.
That one was kind of wild. I think
looked
like you put a little, maybe too much nitro in that one or something.
So you hear the rain of bullets there.
Keep down, dumb bunch of!
Come on, boys, let's load her up!
Hold your fire!
Wood and T.R. were great buddies and ran around Washington together. And Wood was the he was a presidential surgeon for McKinley. He'd received the Medal of Honor in the Geronimo Wars, and that's how he advanced in the army, because he was a medical officer.
But they were very close friends. I mean, that scene that we just went through, I think that's the scene where Wood actually makes him a colonel.
Yeah, makes him a colonel and has him take over the regiment because he's been made a general now.
Because the other guy's too sick to perform, you know, his duties.
General Lawton wishes to report that the attack on El Caney has been met with heavy resistance.
Caney must be taken, regardless of cost.
You'll have to order Kent and Wood to assault the heights. Without the flanking support of Lawton.
God help us, they are pouring it down, those boys.
This is interesting. He gets hit here.
Right.
And he really was. He was paralyzed here, Marshall. And he lived until 1936, even though he was very, very badly wounded here. And, of course, Crane, who doesn't get hit at all, only lived 2 more years.
He died of tuberculosis, though.
Yeah.
He
gave me some advice before I joined. Well, this is good.
Indian bomb, right?
Yes.
Did you follow it?
No.
What about you? What are you thinking about in all of this?
Naked women.
Indian Bob told him to talk to his elders and everything. He went back and they told him everything he should do and all that. And, he is a direct relative, a direct descendant of Sitting Bull. And so he had everything blessed and everything like that, and had the Warrior Society look at all of his stuff. Now, he's, highly decorated veteran of Vietnam, so he is of the Warrior Society.
They always put the
he loves it. The Sioux love this film. They love the way the Indians are treated in this film. They made me an honorary Sioux. This is good, this guy right here.
That's another thing relative to what you asked before. One of the effects on the military, this really does begin sort of the move towards integration.
Yeah.
This is the first time, when there wasn't a liberation cause by way of the Civil War, that these people had fought side by side. Because I guess the Buffalo Soldiers were named that in the Indian War.
Right.
But they really were segregated. They operated mm-hmm. their own thing.
With white officers.
Right. But this is by far their most heroic event, because the future...
They take San Juan Hill.
Yeah, if the future president of the United States is stuck up there, you'll see, and he's... Without these guys, he might have been...
He wouldn't have made it.
He probably wouldn't have been.
That boot. Come on.
Gee, this is the great character arc in our the guy here that we saw in the very beginning is the thief and it's kind of the scoundrel who's now volunteering to rush in.
He wants to be with the other guys, who he didn't give a damn about, and he didn't care. He's gonna go back.
Gonna grab that crutch and go.
Well, you ain't gonna leave me here. Glory to the cavalry.
They're gonna go together. That they come across a band here.
What a state!
He's bleeding, sir.
It's just a lump.
Sir!
And he got wounded here in the wrist.
Yeah. So Hornet Sting was his famous quote.
I've lost more men than I did at Los Guasimas. We've got to know what's going on.
Colonel Roosevelt.
One never knows.
Well, I intend to find out, Pershing. Saddler Sergeant Wilson. Get on this horse.
In a battle, you don't know. You're sitting there. They're just sitting there taking a pounding, you know. And they don't know what to do. You know, and that's why the whole idea of this is that they take such a pounding and it's a relief when they can attack. Because they can do something, you know.
Well, and all
that
the senior
actually
command
happened
is
where
gone,
the,
right?
Where his sergeant was just killed right in front of him. Just as soon as he got on a horse, he was hit by a stray bullet. Died right in Roosevelt's arms.
I'm a soldier, sir. I'll go.
He rides here. Watch this great explosion right here.
Yeah, and this guy's a good rider, Marshall.
I guess when he's coming back, there's a big explosion. And he's having his malarial.
Well, that's why things are so disorganized here. The senior command is all sick. They've promoted everybody, and there wasn't. You saw in the beginning.
And they've never been shelled like this from long distance. The rear areas are being hit. They don't, you know, everything's in chaos because, you know, the Germans have the high ground. And, I mean, the Germans, the Spanish. So I'm sounding like Wheeler.
Yeah. The Yankees.
So the damn Nazis Yankees. Damn Nazis have the high ground, you know. This is great because this is true. He was painting next to the worst place. It's called Bloody Ford, where this is right here. And Remington was painting right there the whole day. Just didn't care.
It's pretty big, though, huh, for a television... Let me look at this thing. This is a real movie, man.
This is a great sequence here. Hearst and Remington had a great relationship, Remington was, you know, he'd go off to the Indian Wars, he'd go off everywhere and paint these paintings that would be put in Hearst's papers, and they became great friends, and he painted paintings for Hearst in his house and stuff, and they hung out together, they'd go off places, and they'd kind of have adventures together.
Is there anything I can do? You could file my dispatches for me. I don't mean ahead of yours, but you file them when you can.
I'd be happy to.
I had a notebook.
Yeah.
Take my camera.
I love this stuff between you two. Yeah.
What's happening, Brad? Stay here and tell me if it's not.
Right, he asks him, he says, would you file my dispatches? Not before yours, of course.
I seize him! There's my gun on!
There's your white cowboy over there.
Goodbye, my friend. I hope you live to be an old codger.
Good luck, Arizona. Good luck. We done the right thing?
Maybe not.
The Rough Riders had reunions, of course, after this, and Roosevelt went to every one of them.
It was a very elite club of people that actually fought with Teddy in, in Cuba.
And if somebody was a member of that regiment, boy, for the rest of their life, they were treated extremely well. There almost could be no greater American hero, or no regiment you could belong to that was treated better than veterans of the Rough Riders.
You still running that leg?
I can run up that hill.
Welcome back, Henry. Welcome back, old man.
Ash.
See, he's surprised that he came back. But he isn't.
Oh, this is this terrible Bucky. He says, no Spanish bullet can ever...
Yeah, this is the way he died.
Yep.
Why in the hell did you come back?
I came back for you, sir. I come back for them. Hell, I got lonely. Thought maybe...
Maybe what?
Thought maybe I could do some good, be of some use. Thought maybe I could help somebody.
Never be any use. Where's your weapon?
I got the weapon.
Here. Take one.
Damn it, sir. This is your rifle here.
Point it at them, damn it, not me.
Right. Yes, sir.
Sir, you better get down. You might get hit.
There ain't a Spanish bullet made to kill me.
Nash!
I love this shot because it kind of looks like Iwo Jima, doesn't it? He was killed that way. He just said just before that, he said,
"They done.
Isn't a Spanish bullet can hit me?" And there he was. He was, and when he was killed, you know, there was some thought that everybody was going to come apart, but he trained them so well. But I mean, they're all dirty and the smoke and everything, and pinned down. It looks like it's timeless, you know. It could be any war.
Get back to the line, Henry.
This is my favorite. I don't know. I keep telling you every moment's my favorite moment. But I love this when they sing here.
Build a statue if I have to.
It's a great song. It's a song of rebellion.
What's its history? What's the...
It's an Irish song of rebellion.
Off
does that, you know the Spaniels are in for it. This was a nice scene here.
Sir! We need to attack the heights!
Mighty lively today, ain't it?
Mighty lively today.
Yeah, essentially, they've just been waiting for orders.
Yeah, and he's given him the order to attack. Now what?
You okay?
Just a little scratch.
I'm going to join the attack, Daddy!
I'm proud of you, son!
What did I say to that man?
Here's a great explosion as he rides in.
General Wheeler's compliments? He says to kick him in the teeth, sir.
Outstanding, Lieutenant Pershing. You will be my right to assault the heights.
Yes, sir.
Sir.
I'll be your orderly, sir.
Delighted, Sergeant Marchand.
Oh, just watch this battle. This is great when they attack right here. There's some great handheld work that Tony Richmond did with a camera that he called Siegfried, which was an original Nazi Aeroflex.
Chachos! You have heard the colonel! We are going to advance in Russia!
Wadsworth! You are acting sergeant! You take first section, take Indian Bob with you!
Yes, sir! Indian Bob!
See, they're all ready. There's just the relief and exhilaration of a charge. You know.
Well, they've just been taking such a hell of a pounding down there.
Yeah.
Get off your bellies!
First and second section!
On your feet!
Advance!
I love it here that he says, advance the colors. Shells, if you notice, there's not a lot of fire or anything. It's just the when a thing goes off, it's just the, you know, the smoke and dust and everything, because that's what they really were. And they're about the right size too. Of course, they threw shrapnel in every direction. I think there's one where it cuts down a tree right here.
Yeah.
Seeing the guy carrying the machine gun there, and this is what they had to do. This tremendous distance, they had to walk. They couldn't run because they're not going to run up that whole hill, and they were just under fire the whole time.
Follow me at the walk!
Occasionally you'll notice the officers are carrying a different kind of rifle, a lever-action rifle, a Winchester. It's because Roosevelt was short of rifles, so he bought them. He fired the same ammunition from Winchester to give to his officers so that he could make sure they had enough that they'd be able to go. Because he was a wealthy man by then. I mean, he'd regained his wealth.
And this was his favorite little horse, Little Texas.
It's called Little Texas, that horse. And you notice he has his bandana around his hat. And, of course, he's got his pockets filled with spare glasses and his hat filled with spare glasses.
We're losing ground on our right flank, General. We must maintain that advance on the entrenchments. Get into that defilade!
Both Billy Catt, who plays Marshall, and he was one of the stars of Big Wednesday, as was Busey. He was, I knew, when I wanted somebody to do this, he was one of the first people I thought of. See how they're using the cover here? They're down into this, they're going across this thing, but then they get into this ditch to go up there.
Those lines.
get his glasses shot.
That was the second time he got hit. He got hit in the hand.
And here's the Gatling guns, which made a big difference. The guy who operated the Gatling guns, Lieutenant Parker, won the Medal of Honor here because he got out in the open. And, which is interesting, they gave him the Medal of Honor, but they didn't give TR the Medal of Honor until recently. See how they're in the ditch there? That gave him some cover. I like to shoot where you can see the geography. You can see where they're going, what they're doing. There's San Juan Hill. They're in their ditch, so they're sort of safe there. Then you go across this little, you know, kind of saddle here. And there is Kettle Hill.
It was an old sugar kettle, right? It was an old sugar refinery up there.
Kettle Hill. And that's what they took in a direct charge, is Kettle Hill. And then they go across the saddle, but
and then on the other side, what was the city's right behind it?
Yeah, the city is right behind it. Now he'll explain it here. Watch this.
What do you think, sir? Can you engage the San Juan Heights? We can't, sir. Good. Then the Rough Riders will move on Kettle Hill and review the right.
Very good, sir.
Good luck.
Thank you, sir.
Sergeant Barchard!
Sir!
Bring up Little Texas!
Yes, sir!
Now, this is an interesting thing. People always said that Roosevelt was a political opportunist. This is a great act of political opportunism. He's the only one on a horse leading a charge into machine guns.
Right. Yeah, by far the highest profile target in the group.
And here is the famous charge of San Juan Hill.
As Remington so famously portrayed in the painting.
Looks just like this.
So this is a real. I mean, look at this.
Yeah, look at that charge.
This is a real
that's
movie.
That's as good a charge as your. Look at that shot.
You wait for the war to come to you. Let's take it to them.
Look at that. That's as good as. I love that shot. That's like a painting.
Actors loved this scene. They were so excited to finally get up there. Particularly Noth. Chris Noth was so excited to actually finally get into some hand-to-hand and do something kind of physical. Mark Moses.
A scene where somebody surrenders and he shoots him anyway.
He that had no stomach for this fight, let him depart.
Let's go, Sergeant! Hit nine! We've got him on the run! Action left! Elevate! Break him down! Advance!
I don't think when he did this, he calls it his crowded hour. And it was the greatest hour of his life, he said. And because he always wanted to lead men in battle. And he always wanted to have an opportunity to do some great heroic, you know, act like Caesar or Alexander. Alexander or something. And this was it. And he knew he would never do something like this again. Here, this is a good shot because it shows how they're getting under the machine guns. Because the machine guns are on the crest of the hill,
right,
rather than what is called the military crest, where they could shoot down on them. See how the guns are unable to depress. They didn't know that much about machine guns then.
I don't think Teddy, from what I know of him, had any... really, I think this idea that he was such a self-promoter and used this war strictly for his own political aims.
Yeah, no, I mean, Teddy believed in this war. Yeah.
And the whole martial spirit and a life of vigorous exercise, it's what ultimately undid him. His son was, Quentin, was one of the first to die in World War I.
Mm-hmm. And he never recovered he never recovered from that. He never recovered from his trip to the Amazon, where he got very, very sick.
That's right. So, I mean, he espoused this martial way of life all his life and lived it.
Yeah, he
and
lived...
this was the culmination of all that. And there was no higher moment for him than to actually lead guys in battle and to succeed. I mean, to watch. I mean, things get a little bit disorganized, the fog of war and all, but it is pretty amazing.
But, you know, he lived completely by the rules of you might say, chivalrous knightly conduct, you know, that... You know, that it was expected of a young, daring, you know, gentleman of the time. But also, he understood the American spirit. He understood the energy and the sense of the, you know, the power of the common man and the goodness of the common American man, you know, and what he could do and what he wanted to do. I mean, he saw that. He saw that more than other people, really. He saw, I mean, he you know, one of the things about us as a nation, we've always tried to be good guys. We don't often pull it off, but we've tried to be, you know, the guys who are giving the food out from the tanks as we go through Paris and stuff. And we're citizen soldiers. We don't really want to do this, you know. We have to be here for something. And he saw that. This war was really about that, really. And he actually did understand that, you know, there were forces that were, you know, concerned with empire, that were concerned with you know, owning the sugar, owning the fruit, you know, where today would be owning the oil and stuff like that, and that those forces must be kept in check. And that's why when he gets on the top of this hill, he responds that way. I love this.
Lead and fire, piercing the red breath of the beast. What a sight. My God, listen to them yell. Listen.
American would give an arm to see this.
Are you feeling better?
Yes. I'm glad you were here. This is a great day. Even if it is my last.
No.
Listen to me.
Turn the bolt towards San Juan Hill and shoot the heads off those Spaniards.
Very good, sir.
There you go.
Yes, sir.
Woo!
Section! Action left, San Juan!
Good,
lockout, 500 yards!
500 yards! Yes, sir!
Send the Spanish our compliments.
Those guys wrote Marshall and I combined. Who was the other journalist? Marshall and the other guy who was. So, you know, I combined two characters together there. But I was always really fascinated with Stephen Crane. I thought he was the most interesting.
There goes Woods. Yeah. In this charge.
And, you know, he took the 71st New York up. And they were a National Guard's unit that was sort of almost a social unit. You know, the people were in the National Guard because it was a social thing to do. I mean, and they really distinguished themselves. Look, you could see them going up the hill. See, we didn't have that many people. Today we would have just covered the hill with CGI.
That's right, yeah.
But we had enough. That's actually probably what it would look like. I like this where they take the machine gun.
Nick Schiesen, comrades. Well, Nick Benign, don't stop this. Nick Schiesen!
Henry, no!
Henry!
Not yet!
Don't touch him, I need the Hun! Bring him over here!
Bring the Hun. See, he'd gone to college. He'd gone to university in, I think, Heidelberg or Leipzig or someplace. He'd done a whole European tour. Right?
He spoke French,
German.
Well, he spoke German because Roosevelt, you know, it was a Dutch name, but they spoke German in his house.
Fuck is the English?
Nein, Herr Oberst.
Die Welt waren diese Waffe.
I can see Dan Gert van der Richter's inside einen.
I can see it feet from the right. Put it through in the Bob. Was noch? Was noch? Tag schnell, was noch?
Rücken Sie slow, Schäfer, vorwärts.
All right. Push the boat forward twice. Again, Craig. Was noch?
Rücken Sie ab zu nieder.
Press the trigger. What are you waiting for, Lieutenant Payne? Sergeant Tiffany?
All right.
We had a wonderful relationship. We just, Beringer and me and Bill and everybody, we were just having a great time. We were constantly fighting the studio to get every little thing we could, you know, and they were trying to take it away from us, so.
As always, yeah.
Yeah.
He's just a great mate of ours. I mean, we've known each other for now. I did a movie Sliver in 1993 when I first met him. And,
They're doing the St. Crispin's Day speech.
Chief, we band of brothers
that fought with us upon St. Crispin's Day!
What are they talking about?
They're educated men.
See, I love this shot because you can see the geography. You see where they have to go now. That they're on the flank, the other guys are attacking, they're shooting from here, and they're going to have to go up there. And these guys are trying to come from the other side.
Cease fire! Cease fire!
Sliver, we did, the next time we met, was a Paramount picture a long time ago. We became fast friends, and then as a result of the movie, three or four of these guys, Francesco and Mark Moses, and particularly Noth, they, whenever Tom's in town, we all get together, and you know, we've actually tried to put some other things together, and other careers have taken off. You know, Kristen went off and became big and everything in Sex and the City, and never kind of got it together. This fellow actually here, this Titus fellow here, does, I think, the best impression of Sam Elliott I've ever heard.
Yeah. He's a very good actor.
Very good.
All these guys are just wonderful actors.
Really are. This was really fun, this thing. Because they all liked each other.
Yeah, this part of it was great. The part that was difficult was dealing with the studio.
We had some very unpleasant people between us and the studio.
Yeah.
As well.
They're all gone now.
They're all gone.
The film is here. The film is here. The film is eternal. Those people are dead.
Kill that German! Remember the man!
Look at the size of that shot.
That's what I'm saying, you know?
I mean, look at that. I mean, this is a little, you know, TV movie.
You're right. But, you know, it's hard enough to make a romantic comedy in a diner. You try and get one of these things going.
Watch. They're almost at the top. Rising steadily like a tide. I could see men silhouetted against the sky. I could see the flags. I could see the flags, old man. I could see the flags! Waving like freedom!
There were three of them originally. The three journalists.
Yeah, Stephen Crane. What was his first name? Marshall?
Marshall. And then there was the other guy. And I just, you know, took two of them and combined them into one. We had three there. And the actor didn't like that I'd cut out several of his lines. He says, I can't play this. You've taken my lines. I said, there's the bus. Never, never mess with a writer. Yeah, you know, what's the Churchill always said? Don't argue with people who buy ink by the gallon. You know? You know, don't ever argue with a writer. If it's a writer director, he can find a way around. I think my son is in here shooting somebody. My son just shot somebody.
You know, if the people that are involved in the financing of these things don't get sort of the spirit that John is talking about, this is about a nation growing into its own and the fact that there's this great American character and you're doing something about the unification as opposed to the division of people in a common cause with a common enemy and with sort of a direction. If the senior guys don't get that, they don't really know what the hell you're doing. And so it's very hard to explain to them that you need this, that, and the other thing, because fundamentally, intrinsically, philosophically, they're not on the page. It makes it much more difficult.
Yeah, they're just trying to, you know, basically they're, you know, trying to not get fired for something they do.
Said about the first day, about how many squibs have been used or something. You say, wait a minute, we're shooting one of the most famous battles in history. You're going to argue with us? We've got thousands of people out here that spent months doing this, only you're going to worry about how many squibs go off? I mean, you've got to be kidding.
There's my son. He just shot the guy. My son just, you know, became a lawyer. He passed the bar.
They're at the top. They're at the top. This day is ours. We will never be forgotten. Never. History will remember this day, my friend. God bless.
And of course, this is my favorite scene here. What goes on here, where he goes out, and this whole thing, this whole mood, this is stuff here that is, it's all about, not the big battles, but what happens, this is where you're going. I had planned it very well, so I knew just where the sun would be. See all these shots here? These are all shot without sound. This is my second unit shooting this. just see. It says Empire. And what he says here is interesting.
It's all right, Trump. It's all right.
It'll never be the same.
I wish I'd watched this movie again earlier. I haven't seen this thing in so long. This is really a good movie. You forget, the years go by.
Crane, what happened to him?
Hit through the spine. Paralyzed, I'm afraid.
I'm sorry for your misfortune, Marshal. We must do something for him, Willie.
Lincoln, see to him. Take him to the beach, to my yacht. Notify my surgeons immediately and give him a good cigar.
Right away, Mr. Hurst.
I shall see to it that you have the finest medical care that money can provide, sir.
Thank you, sir.
No, it is I who owes thanks to you, sir, for your sacrifice. And you'll be happy to know we shall beat every other newspaper to this story. You honor me with your valor, sir.
An honor returned, sir.
Well, you know, I was an experienced veteran when I did this, so I knew what I was doing. I never hesitated for a second, you know. And I didn't have time to hesitate for a second, to tell you the truth. You know, I was just concerned with getting everything I could before they, you know, pulled the plug on me here or there, you know, or said, you got to cut this out or cut that out, you know. And see, these moments to me are the most important. You know, I mean, inevitably, you know, you're always, you know, it's an ageless battle that the director has or that the artist has. They say, why do you need this? You know, we've got them taking the hill. I love this sequence, too. He's really good at this.
You guys didn't do so bad yourselves. Good job, Colonel.
Theodore. Well done, old friend.
We lost a great many friends here today.
I'm dreadfully sorry for calling you cowards. I was mistaken. Please forgive me. There are no cowards here. Mr. Crane, would you be so kind with your camera to take a photograph of our regiment on this glorious hill? For we shall always live in its shadow.
It'd be an honor, sir.
I was hoping they'd, you know, put it in Europe. You know?
Yeah, we had an argument going for a while in Europe because Gettysburg had been released over there.
See, look, I love that. That's
in my hangar. That's the only photograph I have hanging in the hangar at Santa Monica Airport. a great picture.
Yeah, I love this, him coming back. I love the whole idea of them coming back, you know.
I mean, this is the kind of old, this is old style filmmaking. This is a John Ford movie.
Yeah.
You bookend it. You get to know all these guys and their individual lives. See, so you're engaged when they're put into jeopardy. It's just a better way of making movies.
I like that where he comes back. This is, you know, also the cost of war. You know, he comes back to his place. And
he's having a celebratory cigar, however. I don't think he's...
Well, he's just sitting there and just life is, you know, you don't know what's going to happen to him. He went to World War I, actually. He became, you know, a very rich, important industrialist. And then he ended up in World War I. Of course, here's Wood. Promoting Pershing.
Teddy back home on Sagamore Hill, right?
Yeah. Well, it's not Sagamore Hill.
No.
Some house in Washington, supposedly.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Boys have grown so tall. Makes me feel short. Where's my little bunnies? How are you?
See, he's so real on all this stuff, you know?
He's a real family guy himself.
Yeah. I lost 20 pounds in Cuba. Here's Brad as an old man. And see, they dug up the money and...
Well, I haven't seen you boys since the First World War ended. We licked the Kaiser soundly. My wife's fine. My oldest is off to Harvard. And I'm fine. A millionaire now. Never forgot the start you gave me. I saw Theodore and his wife. They're home in Oyster Bay. He's not in good health. But damn, he was the finest president we'll ever have. Lost a son in the war. He told me something that you ought to like.
I love the idea that he became a millionaire. rancher, you know, outlaw. And that's what this country was made of. Outlaws who became millionaires.
Probably won't get out of here next year. But I'll see you boys soon enough.
And, you know, he's had to come a long way to go there, you know. So he obviously comes there once a year or something.
Still limping from the gunshot wound.
Yeah. Well, I hope you enjoyed the Rough Riders. Thanks for joining us, and I hope you remember these people and this incident of history, and if this has helped you to remember that, you know, that this was a really important part of our history, then I've done my job.